Are you also tired of one-size-fits-all weight loss plans? Meet Noom, the personalized solution that meets you where you are. Noom is able to understand your unique needs, from dietary restrictions to medical concerns. Unlike restrictive programs, Noom embraces your lifestyle and choices. Discover a sustainable approach to weight loss, tailored just for you. Honestly, Noom felt like it was made for me. It's not just about what I eat. It's about understanding why. With Noom, I've learned so much about myself and built healthier habits that stick. It's all about progress, not perfection. Say goodbye to restrictive diets and experience the Noom app for yourself with personalized lessons and expert coaching. Noom's psychology and biology-based approach has helped over 5.2 million people achieve their goals. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Greetings and welcome to another episode of Canadian History X. Sam Roberts is probably one of the biggest musicians in Canada for the past 20 years. He had his debut album, The Inhuman Condition, which was released in 2002, and he's released several albums since then. He's been nominated for 14 Juno Awards, won 6. He's won Artist of the Year twice. And, like everybody else, he is dealing with COVID-19. So I chatted with Sam Roberts all about his new album, All of Us. The album was actually finished right before the lockdown went into effect. But a lot of the songs and the message of the album kind of relates to people working together, being together. So, interestingly enough, it fits with our COVID-19 world. Now, I'm going to get right to this interview because I am a huge fan of Sam Roberts. I have been since my early 20s, and it was awesome to be able to talk to him. It was great. So let's get right to the interview. But before I get to the interview, how about I just mention that you can support the podcast through Patreon for $3 a month. Just go to patreon.com/CanadaEHX. You can also leave a donation for the podcast by going to my website, CanadaEHX.com, and clicking donate. So I'll get right to it. What have you kind of been up to over the past few months amid COVID, and how has it kind of impacted your tours, your shows? I know you had to cancel a whole bunch.
Yeah, I mean, by impacted, it's like if you imagine an impact being like a violent event, like an asteroid, it's been deep impact. I think if there was one reference I could make, it would be the film Deep Impact from one of the great disaster films of... I think it was the late 90s.
96, 97, yeah.
96, 97, yeah, the heyday, I think some might say. But the shows have been obliterated. Although, you know, that's not entirely fair because as much as most of the summer was wiped out, we did manage to play a few shows, two in Toronto at sort of drive-in style show, you know, in front of cars and park in a parking lot, but it ended up being actually quite a beautiful couple of nights for sure. We also played the Ottawa Blues Fest, did a drive-in version this year, and we were lucky enough to be there. So we had three shows under our belts under the current sort of regime, considering that we thought it was going to be at least a year before we had a chance to get up on stage again, we'll consider ourselves lucky.
Is it kind of odd? I guess you could probably feed off the audience a bit when you can see them in person. So is it a bit more difficult when you have to see them sitting in their cars and instead of cheering, they're honking the horns?
I mean, nothing's really strange these days anymore. So I think we'd already had 3-4 months of lockdowns and sort of pandemic living at that point. So no, it didn't feel strange at all. We were just really, really excited to be back up there playing again. I don't think we realized just how much we take for granted that the summertime for us is a time when we're on tour, traveling from city to city, beautiful nights under the stars, playing music. And that's been our life for the majority of our lives now. That's been how we've spent our summers. So to have just a little bit of a taste of that again, obliterated any unease or misgivings about, you know, the nature of the show or the audience. So, and people, after a while, you kind of realize, yeah, there's a living, breathing human being in that car. It's not just all auto parts, mm-hmm. you know, and as much as I'm into sci-fi and like the idea of potentially playing a show for sort of car, actual kind of sort of robot cars at some mm-hmm. point, I grew up in the age of the Transformers, so I still hold on to that, mm-hmm. potentially playing a show for Autobots, Decepticons one day, but it was a lot of fun.
So then you have a new album out, and I was doing some reading on it, and the whole kind of message behind the album seems like, you know, coming together in trying times, but then the really cool thing is you had this finished before we ever went into lockdown. So tell mm-hmm. me a bit about All of Us and how it came about.
Well, I was working on it the same way that I would on any record. Right here in this room in my basement, my home in Montreal, and not thinking for a second that the release of this record would take place in the sort of conditions and circumstances that we find ourselves in, so if there's any connection to COVID-19 and the reality that it comes with, it wasn't intentional, that's for sure, but we're finding out these days what it means to make music under different conditions. So it's strange to think back now. If I go back to sort of starting this record, probably about two and a half years ago, writing the first songs, that, you know, you're completely oblivious to the fact that at some point this is going to be all filtered through the lens of a global pandemic. But in terms of the sort of content of the record and what motivated the record, I don't write music for trying times necessarily. Mm-hmm. I'm not sitting down saying, okay, life is difficult, I need to write a song about it. I write songs because I've always written songs since I was a kid. I don't really, I'm not sure what the motivation for that is or why, what prompts you to sit down and hit record or put pen to paper, but I do it. And then it's only afterwards that it sort of takes on the complexion of the times and the realities of the world around you. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the amazing things about music, I find, is that regardless of what your intent is or your intentions, that it will act as almost a sponge and soak in a lot of the sort of, the emotions and the colors around you, whether that's what you're trying to do or not. And this record, I think more than any I've ever made before, has acted that way, whether I wanted to or not.
And this record was completed, I think you mentioned, just hours before kind of lockdowns went into place.
Mm-hmm. It was literally.
What was the process like then afterwards? Like, I don't know too much about making a record, but mm-hmm. with COVID and being locked down, was there any challenges after the record was finished for whatever else you had to do with it?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the first challenge is actually being physically in the same room as your bandmates and the producer to make the record. So that was the biggest hurdle. And I think we were lucky enough, like you said, to sort of come in right under the wire, right before the first lockdown. We were driving home listening to the news, and they were announcing that we were all going to be locked down from the studio that we're at in Northern Quebec. And following that, when you finish making a record, the next thing you do is mix the record, which is to take all the tracks that you've recorded and to give them shape and proportion. Mm-hmm. And it's essentially what you hear as a listener is the result of the mix. And so fortunately, mixing can happen via remote. So the mixer will sit there in his studio, you know, put together a version of the song, send it to myself or my bandmates, and we'll comment on it and say, oh, the drums are too quiet, the vocals are too loud, you know, and then we kind of go through this sort of back and forth process and get that into the shape that we eventually want it to be. So we were kind of quite busy still for the first little while. And and it almost sort of delayed the sinking in of the of the truth that the changes that were happening were much more profound and were going to affect us for a longer time. So we were kind of, yeah, just kept busy. And then by the time mixing ended, I was basically a full-time school teacher at home for my three kids, because they'd been, you know, the schools had shut down, and and so I got distracted by geography and history and French for the next few months. And yeah, I think it was only really in the summertime that it started to sink in. It's like, wait, why am I not going on the, you know, going out on the road? Absolutely. What's happening here?
Any song on the album that you're especially, that kind of speaks to you more, or that you feel that fits more for what people might be going through right now?
Well, you know, it depends. It depends on the day. Sometimes, for me, I think that there are a few songs that I find more personal, and from that, I mean, writing from the perspective of my own memories and my own life, in I guess a more autobiographical sense, and so you're always a little bit more. It's not that you like them more, but you're just a bit more protective of those songs, mm-hmm. because they're revealing something. And so for me, a song like War Chest or Spellbound, Wolf Tracks too. See, I'm already at three. I'm already at three out of nine songs. So I'm not the Ghost Town. You know, those to me are the songs that, you know, again, it's, you're not necessarily intentionally writing to connect with other people, but if you write close enough to your own close enough to your own truth or whatever the word is, then other people will find common ground there, because, you know, as human beings, as different as we all can be, there's a thread that binds us all together. And I think if you kind of write close to that, then you'll find a way to connect with other people, pandemic or no pandemic. I guess I'm always aware of the fact that if I write something that's personal enough, that somebody else out there listening will say, hey, that sounds an awful lot like what I'm going through right now. And then that thread starts to weave its way through people's lives. I think that that's one of the more powerful things that music brings to us all.
Absolutely. Will you be doing any kind of live stream shows? I know a lot of artists are starting to do those in the coming months. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've done a few. We did one on Canada Day, and we've tried to experiment with different formats, and it's almost like, you know how we're talking about virtual backgrounds. It's the same thing with live stream. All of a sudden, you just have to sort of, you're scrambling to find some new way of presenting the same thing, essentially. But I think now that we've got a record out and there's new music to play that other people, you know, have heard and can sing along to, then it's time to do that. So in the next couple of weeks, we're going to be trying to knock together I guess kind of something that would representative of what it would be like if we were actually going out on tour right now, mm-hmm. which is what we would be doing after an album launch, and just trying to play new music for the first time, trying to figure out a way to play it live, which is completely different than what you do in the studio. Mm-hmm. So we're going to try to replicate the uncertainty of an early album launch tour.
I guess you kind of mentioned it there, but going into next year, if things get back to a new normal or somewhat normal, what's kind of on tap for you beyond the live stream shows and promoting the album?
Yeah, I mean, if things get back to normal, and if that means touring again, then we're going to come out of the gates like a rocket, you know? I mean, we'll have a lot of pent-up energy and frustration at that point, so... We keep planning tours, and I'm sure this is probably representative of a lot of people's lives, whether you play in a rock and roll band or not. We keep making these future plans right now, And at first, those future plans were, you know, fall of 2020. Now, then they went to, okay, no, we're probably talking about winter 2021. Mm-hmm. Now we're looking at summer 2021. And so right now, our sort of golden age that's you know, around the corner is somewhere in the summer of 2021. And I'm sticking to that with every optimistic fiber of my being, you know, so...
You mentioned that, you know, you have to go away on tour, usually in the summers and such. So is it kind of, there's a positive to the fact that you were home through the summer, you got to spend, the summer with your kids and your family. And so next year will be kind of another adjustment to go back, like you said, on tour and not be home through the summer.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think my bandmates and I have been in some ways dreaming about a summer where we didn't tour, just to do exactly what you're saying, to have that summer where you're just around your kids all the time and going on camping trips and things like that. Unfortunately, this being the summer that happened, finally we weren't allowed to do anything, especially in Quebec, where we've had a bit of a rough ride. So it was like the summer, the fantasy summer that never was, kind of thing. So I don't know, but we did spend a lot of quality time together, for sure. So I don't think they'll begrudge us if we have to go out there and hit the road again next year.
I've talked to a few artists over the past few months, and I like to ask them about the arts. Do you feel like COVID and everybody being home, looking for ways to be entertained, that COVID is showing people the importance of the arts in our lives, whether it's music or shows or books or what have you?
I hope so. You know, I mean, I really do. I hope that people are seeing the value. And sometimes, again, it takes deprivation to fully appreciate something, you know, not being able to go to a concert, not being able to go to a theater or an art gallery, and then connecting the dots that, oh, wait, if I don't go to a concert, how is that musician who's provided such joy in our lives able to sustain their way of life? And the same thing goes for painters and writers and playwrights. And I do feel like in Quebec, you know, and Canada in general, I think we have a good sense of the value of the arts, far more so than some places. But I think at this time you realize just how dire it gets when we can't physically sort of go out and show support like that. So there's no question that musicians and artists are probably at home right now doing what they do, which is trying to make something that positively or, you know, either challenges or affects people's lives in some ways. But there has to be a way to figure out how to make it viable, how to that they can survive and dedicate. It does take dedication too. It's not a hobby. Mm-hmm. I think that's part of the misconception a lot of the times, is that this is just like a, you know, oh, you just happen to be a creative person, so you can dedicate part of your time and your mind to that creative pursuit endeavor. But it's not like that. It's a full vocational way of life, and it requires all of your time and attention and energy. And so you just hope that the public realizes that and finds a way, the way we support other industries, that we find a way to support the artistic community as well. Because if you take it out of the equation, you know, life would be pretty bleak.
I think everybody
boring. Knows that. Pretty boring. So,
Do you think after COVID, things will be different with how albums are made, how concerts are done? Do you feel like this might be a seismic shift in how we experience a lot of things that we maybe took for granted earlier?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's a good question. And obviously, we'll see. Recording music has changed so much since, in the last 15, 20 years. As it is, it's already on a sort of... fast-paced track to some new reality anyway, in terms of being able to do things in your home that you used to have to go into a multi-million dollar studio and, you know, spend heaps of money to sort of make a record. Now mm-hmm. people are making incredible music out of a laptop. So I mean, that again, I think the lack of funds will drive that even further, that people will have to become that much more self-sufficient mm-hmm. that way. So, you know, I'm not really sure in terms of concerts either. I still don't see anything quite being able to duplicate the experience of being in a crowd of, you know, 200 people singing with all their hearts of, you know, sweating and writhing and, you know, mm-hmm. Or in a crowd of 10,000 people watching their favorite band again under an open sky. It's hard to imagine anything else ever sort of replacing that. So, yeah. And I hope it doesn't.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Sam Roberts. And if you did, please leave a rating and review. You can reach me at craig@canadaehx.com. You can also visit my website where you'll find hundreds of articles on Canada's history. Just go to canadaehx.com. You'll also find all my podcast episodes there. And again, you can support the podcast for as little as $3 a month. Just go to patreon.com/canadaehx. Just like all of these wonderful patrons have. Aaron O'Hara, Robert Dunseith, Todd Casey, Catherine Roy, Luke S., Vic Hedges, J.P. Bear, Jason Hall, Phil Maynard, Spencer M., and Iris Gray. Thanks, and we'll see you again next time.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.